Hi and welcome to Steve Fulton, the Magic Show. Here we go. Now, it's been a bit of a break. Sorry about that. There's been loads going on, mostly me learning how to do podcasts and learning how to edit, which has been a very wonderful, but sometimes challenging process. But I'm kind of getting there now, so it's great. This is really worth waiting for me. I met Tina Lennart many, many years ago, and you know, we had good chats and hung out a bit 20 years ago, and since then have not. We didn't see each other for like 18 years, and then finally saw each other again. And I met her and Mike at kind of the session in Blackpool, but there's so much going on that we didn't really get a chance to chat. So finally we sat down, and, you know, really for me, all these are about what's, you know, what is it about that person that allows them to get to where they are today? And Tina, you know, is someone that is a phenomenal magician, a wonderful person, a yoga teacher, a harpist, a ukulele player, a dancer, a mime, and, you know, started her performing days as a street performer. So I kind of, there was a connection there. And in this conversation, you're going to hear Tina talk about her performing, obviously, the fact that her act, Mr. Mopman, that she's been doing for so very long, I did look it up. I'm not going to look it up again to give you the exact amount of time. But how this has been something that has defined her, and the joys and frustrations of that. And she's done, you know, many more beautiful acts, which I suggest you check out. I will be putting links below. She speaks about fear of failure, being an introvert in a sometimes extroverted world of performing. The importance of yoga, the importance of other people. And this is something, you know, that, as I mentioned, that I really need to kind of work on, is that having more connections, you know, other than, you know, sitting in a room on my own talking to people. But it was just great. And, you know, it's another really long one, not long enough for me, but I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Do please check out onlinemagic.co. That is my online membership. We have special guests very often, live sessions every week or most weeks that are also uploaded, 150 of them, 900 plus other videos on all sorts of magic, and I'm still adding to it regularly. So check out onlinemagic.co, and of course the YouTube channel, Real Magic Review, and Instagram at Steve Faulkner at Real Magic Review. Is there anything I've forgotten? Always. There's always stuff I've forgotten, but please do give this a review. Really, really important. All podcasters say it, and it just makes a massive difference. So if you could review this 5-star review, it'd be lovely on wherever you get your podcast. But the Apple one, I think, is probably one of the easiest places to leave reviews. But you will find this everywhere, and well, you already have because you're listening to it. But please share it. It would be great. You know, people don't just fall across these podcasts anymore. There's so many of them. So if you think this is something a little bit different, please do share it. So thank you so much. Thank you, Tina. I'll be back briefly at the end, but here is my conversation with Tina Lennart. How are, I'm very excited about this. Because we never get to talk. We see each other in passing and always say we're going to catch up at conventions and stuff, and that's clearly always completely impossible. How are you?
Yeah. Good, thank you. Real good.
And it's morning for you now. So what's
it's noon.
It's noon. Okay. So what's the average Tina Lennart morning?
3 times a week I teach yoga. I do my park class and also in the golf course. The mornings between them I take full advantage of, because that's when my mind is the clearest. And there's certain things that I want to do every day. I call them habits, good habits. So I have a little, I stopped doing it because I can sort of do it in my brain, but I have a little checklist. I want to practice the harp, the uke, the ball, and then yoga class. And then walking and all that other stuff is something I do automatically, so I don't have to write that down. So then if I feel that I do all those things, and it's not a matter how long I do it, I can sort of spend the rest of the day doing things like this, or just not, you know, worrying that I'm not doing things to stay ahead, stay in my life, so to speak. So that's my mornings.
When you talk and when you write, I read your your lecture notes. And I said to you in an email that I'm loath to call them lecture notes, because for me, lecture notes are some tricks that people have put together for a lecture, and they're mm-hmm. so, as you know, the reception of your talk at the session a couple of years ago, I think it was.
Last year, yeah.
Yeah. And I said to you, it's like someone looking inside my brain and kind of making sense of it. You do harp, uke, yoga, and then there's the rest of it. And do you manage to fit everything in? And we'll go into more what those things are as well.
Do I manage?
Yeah. Do you ever not manage?
Yeah, I have to get on an airplane or other things that come up that I want to do. Yeah, I mean, I'm not, it's not my specific thing, but when I do have the time to do that, and I still have, I have a good amount of time. I'm not certainly in any kind of a stressful schedule, but I just feel better when I have the chance to do that. But then it's also good to get away from it once in a while.
Yeah, and I suppose we should sort of backtrack a little bit for those people who are new to magic or new to this podcast and would have maybe seen you at conventions, but what do you see yourself as now, as someone that's, you know, a musician, a mime? And I know there are certain things you said in your notes that you don't like it when people say things like, you know, or it makes you uncomfortable when people say that you're theatrical.
Yeah. Well, it's I'm emotional, and I've once in a while I use the term I can monetize my emotions. So that's how I've been able to make a living, is to express myself. And I think that that's the best thing I could ever do. I mean, we all want to express ourselves. It's a matter of crafting it. And that's where the discipline comes. That's where working on getting good habits comes, is to stay with it, to not give up. If you feel that you really want to express something, it doesn't just come out. Not for me anyway. I can't just sort of blurt things out. I have to really study them and go through them and make mistakes and everything and get through. So I just like to kind of balance my emotions in a way that I can use them, because that's really my strongest thing that I have.
And you mentioned that in your 40s, it was dance that you discovered, 50s harp, yoga, I think was next. But magic has been a constant throughout.
Magic is the thing for totally unexpected is what stayed with me. I wanted to play guitar first, and I wanted to play classical, and I assumed that I was going to be a classical guitarist. Then I discovered mime. It hit me quickly that I just saw this amazing mime, and I said, that is what I need to do. And I thought, well, why do I want to do that? It's because I really love the idea of expressing without words. Music, I never used words. And here was a way for me to finally find ways of express myself. And then it was a matter of doing the discipline to be able to be clear with it. You can't just express yourself. You have to have things to say, even if they're not words. And then how do you shape them in what you want to express?
I'm interested in that. When you first saw a mime, someone performing mime, and you said, you know, you felt like you just had to do it. When you first went to the Magic Castle, you felt that you just had to be there and you made things happen. And I wonder where that came from. Is that something you've always had, or was that something that you built and worked on?
I've always been trying to figure out who I am and where I am. And instead of trying, so it's kind of keeping an open mind, pretty much an active mind of waiting for things to grab me. I don't actually go out and say, okay, I want to do this and I want to get it. I wait for things that really grab me emotionally. And I never know what it is. My happy moments in my life is when those times that something hits me really hard and I pursue it. Not everything goes through. There's other things I've done, like doing stained glass work. I like that. I was really obsessed with that for a few months until my fingers completely got all blistered from. So a little thing, I mean, it's not everything has grabbed me, but to me, those are my happy moments, is when I finally feel something that belongs to me. And I didn't know that the day before. That to me are the most exciting moments ever. And I've had enough of them that I can understand that. You know, I recommend this to anybody. If you see something, hear something, see a movie, or just any experience you have, if that grabs you, that means that's you. And that means that if you want that to be a part of you as your way of self-expression, then you pursue that. And then you put up with all the failures, all the pain, all that good stuff that has to come with it. And you just have to get through that and know that even if you never succeeded, I've never felt that I've succeeded on any of these things, but at least I learned. I know we're going to talk about the beginner's mind. We discussed that a little earlier.
Yeah.
I love being a beginner. And I know it's frustrating, you know, when I have anybody when somebody says, oh, I'm not very good, I'm a beginner, I go, keep it. Stay with that. Stay with that curiosity. To me, curiosity is life. It's that's what I live for, is when I just love seeing something and wanting to learn more about it and get involved in it. And it's just been that way. And no, I don't want it to stop. It's slowing down. I mean, I have to, yeah.
Well, you say you're slowing down. I can't see much evidence of that. I'm interested to go back to, we met maybe 20 years ago in Portugal. Yeah. Then I didn't see you for maybe 18 years or something, 17 years. Mm-hmm. Today I watched your Paul Daniels appearance doing your doll act, and I thought we can go back to that because I just think it's great. And all your other performances, obviously the talk that I saw, you winning, was it, no, forgive me if I'm wrong, I've got so many notes in front of me, I don't want to start leafing through them. Mm. Stage magician at the Magic Castle?
It's a while back, yeah.
Yeah, and regular at the Magic Castle. I'm not saying all this stuff just to go, hey, you're great. But as an observer, seeing all that stuff, the yoga that you're teaching now, playing the uke, which we're going to go into, and you say, you know, you don't see yourself as a success. And I'm interested to know what that means to you.
It's that I see people, yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. I see people, they get so totally into one thing that they get just great, brilliant at it. I feel like and you have to do that to be it. And I've gotten so many different things. I finally accepted that I'm a variety artist, I guess you could call it. My talent is my ability to connect all those things together. But I'm not really good at each one of them. So I don't like to use the word, not jealous. I'm envious of people that are just, can do something so beautifully. It's them. And here I am doing all these, but I stop criticizing myself because I said, well, that's me. And I just see all these things as being a part of me. And at the same time, I know that everything I do, there's so many people that do it so much better. And I have to really work with that on myself, is to not be, you know, I am hard on myself, and I'm glad. Because I think that's part of, you know, getting anywhere, is you can't just say, oh, this is good enough. You know, they won't know. The audience doesn't know. I want to know. I want it, you know, I want the work to go from, you know, the middle. And that's why in these later years now, the yoga has been so helpful for me to just understand how to begin everything. We call it the core, but the inner self, take it from there, not from here, not from what they call extremities. So I just find it interesting. And, you know, and again, I just get frustrated because I'm not as good as that other person that does it so much better than me. But I'm trying to let go of that. It doesn't do me any good.
It's such an awful thing to keep saying, hey, you're just like me, you know, because we're all different.
But there's certain, probably, I don't know how many traits there are in people's, but I connected with you, even if all those years and that we hadn't seen each other. And that's good. That means that we're not alone, that other people can understand us. And there are some people that don't understand me, and that's fine, because they don't you and I know what we're talking about. So it's, yeah.
Yes. You mentioned that at one point in your life, you stopped worrying, trying to fit in. And I think that's a revelation to me at being 50, the moment you try and kind of stop trying to please everybody and know what makes you happy and comfortable. When I watch your performances, but I don't go, oh, somebody's doing that better. But I understand that thing of never feeling like other people are better at it. But I think that thing of being constantly curious about so many different things can be a blessing and a curse. You know, I get really, when I start feeling like I've got an act and I'm really working to it, I find something else and work on that at the same time. And they all get good enough, but they never feel like, again, like you say, the person, you know, Cardini's ball act.
Yeah, I was thinking about that today. Yeah, but what happens? Okay, let's say you feel like you're perfect at something. That's horrible to ever feel that you're, you know, I know people that think they're the best at this, and I don't get that. I think that you should always feel that you should be better. That's it's the anticipation of being, it's referred to other things, but sometimes the anticipation of getting something is a lot more exciting than actually getting it. Have you ever like bought something that you really, really wanted, you couldn't do, and you buy it and then it kind of goes, oh, it goes away. I don't really want to feel like I'm the best. I would really be mad at myself if I thought I was the best. I'd say, you can't do that. You know why? You're human. You have to have all the flaws and everything have to be with you. That's the spice. That's what they say. I don't cook, but like a chocolate chip cookie has a little bit of salt in it. It has to have that. It can't just be all sugar. It'd be, ugh, you know, it's that piece of salt that you really want to keep. Just, you know, once in a while, you want a little less salt.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to put too much salt in it. You're in a blind panic all of the time. I think the difference is, Tina, that when you speak about, and many other people that I know speak about that process of mistakes and growth and not being perfect, there's a kind of excitement to it. It's like you like that process of, I don't know it yet and I'm going to know it. Whereas I think some people, and me in the past, I think many times, and actually still with some things now, if I catch myself, I say I don't like it and I convince myself it's because I can't do it. And there's a sort of a tight wire to walk there, I think, that how do you keep going when sometimes it feels that you really can't get something?
There's two ways to go. And I'm having this whole experience because I haven't been creative. And I mean, I've always started a lot of little projects and didn't end. But almost a year ago, Thanksgiving a year ago, Artem Shukin showed me his ball. This sounds weird. But
as he always does.
No, I had to. I'll tell you this experience because I've been experiencing this for real this last year, because he at one point said, I have this routine I'm working on and I don't think it's for me, but I think it would be good for you. And that just built my spirit so much. Somebody telling me that I can do something. It's not someone who was like, he's brilliant. So he had these things made, you know, these gravity ball it's called. So he gave me one and he showed me through the thing and I got really excited. And then I gave up, and all this whole year I've been so up and down, and I'm not angry. I'm just curious. You know, I get curious about it, that why do suddenly something that means so much to me, I don't ever want to see it again. And I've been through this with this ball routine at least 5 times this last year, going, I can't do this. This is, it's not right. I did what I could. I'm letting it go. I have to move on. And I'm finding that it's okay to go through that. And it's okay to, when you're working on something, if it makes you really crazy, you just put it aside, you go away, or keep working on it. Just really force yourself to, you do both things. And that's what I do with myself with the ball. I, first of all, set deadlines you have to set. Otherwise it just sits there forever, anything you want to do. And just know that that's part of it. And the advantage of that is that a lot of people don't have that patience. So if everybody had that patience, then the be a lot more competition. So we're the ones that can actually do that. And we have to be the ones that don't make us crazy if we don't get exactly what we want. But the fun part of this journey is that we don't get what we want. Actually, as I think this is a Mick Jagger's quote, you don't always get what you want, but if you try, you get what you need. You know, so you might get what you need. So you just keep exploring, and you know that your curiosity will also connect you with others. You just get to meet other people, and like I want the end to be to smoke to appear. And I've just kind of learned a lot about what smoke is, and, you know, and just little things like that. Maybe this act will never happen, but I learn a lot. And those things, I love to be able to help others have it. You know, if I have that experience, I go, oh yeah, that happened to me. This is what I did. And because I love getting it from other people when they had come into what feels like a dead end, I can know that there is a continuation if I have it in me. It's an inner drive that I can't quite pinpoint. Why do I keep going when I know that it's probably not going to be a big success? I go because I'm curious to see how far I can take it. And I think that way we can survive and not be, you know, really so hard on ourselves.
Yes. And you mentioned a lot in your, I keep wanting to call it your book, that feels more like a book.
I had the same thing about that, but I think I was like, oh, that's just, you know, that's nothing. I did it, but I, you know, and you're giving me all these nice things about it, and I haven't thought about it. I did that 10 years ago, and I don't, you know, I almost don't even think about it. But thank you. Go on.
Well, there's that thing, isn't there, that whenever you do something, definitely with me, whenever I think of the human thing, when you do something a long time ago, it by default sometimes feels like it must be bad because it was ages ago. I have that thing, you know, if I watch a video, I go, oh, I made that 10 years ago. And then you watch it and go, actually, that's all right, actually.
Sometimes, yeah, yeah. Well, we need to grow. And the problem, I go a little for a moment for Mr. Mottman with me. I've struggled with that. I mean, I've been having Mr. Mottman for over 30 years, and that seems to be what people know me for. And that's my identity, which I'm flattered. But I keep thinking, why can't I go past that? Why can't, you know, you always, artists, if I want to be an artist, you always want your next work to be better because you trained yourself in this. But I haven't gone beyond that in terms of public reaction. And I don't think I think I'm better at it because I worked on it more and a more understanding of what I do. But I try to accept that because I have to respect that that is what is given me a good part of my life. So I just saying, and I think other people have that too, that they get known for one thing and it's really hard to move on.
But is there that they book you and they want to see that because that's what you're known for, or do you have like a choice?
No, I know exactly why that works, because that has a lot of emotional content, Mottman does. The magic, what, a Blendo bag, an appearing wand, you know, flash drink. I mean, you look at that and you go, really? That's a magic act. That's like, no, it's the emotional contact. People identify with that. People want to get better. They want to fall in love. They want to have, it's a sort of the lie, the Picasso lie that reveals the truth. You know, that's what art is. You're just like, I'm not really doing this with a mop. I'm not, you know, all that stuff. That's not real, not true. But it has a certain emotional contact and people cry when they see that. And Scarf and Rings, I prefer doing that because it's a little bright by now, more challenging because it's really very, I love details and it's very specific details where my hands have to be and where, you know, where I'm standing to work, but it doesn't have that impact. In fact, I did a show, the Magic Castle, a couple years ago. I sometimes do both acts, and this very nice person said, oh, when I saw your act, I just was crying. And I said, oh, thank you. And then I start talking about the scarf and rings and he goes, I've never seen you do that. I did it on the same show, but he didn't remember it. And that's, you know, so that's the thing about, you got to really, it's the emotions. It's like, I'll quote another quote is that people, they'll, this is by Maya Angelou. I think it's in the book about, they'll forget what you do, they'll forget what you say, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. And magic has very little of that. I think one of the, of course, I think Derek Delgado's show is probably the strongest form of magic in that sense. Did you get to see it in New York? Or
I was one of the people that only saw it. Yeah, I saw it on the movie. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. No. It's when you saw it live, you could feel the room. I mean, you could the emotion that he, you know, because it's him. It's a very deep personal thing which he has crafted. He's got great artists working with him. So that's what happens when you're deeply emotional, and you are able to craft it in that way that you. You get chills in that show, but I don't think it would come across in the movie as much because, you know, although it was great, but I feel bad for anybody that didn't see that.
I know.
Because that was the true for me, the point of you just feel it and you don't go away thinking, oh, how'd they do that trick? Or I figured out how he did this. And to me, the flaw in magic is that people spend the whole time trying to figure out how the trick works. And you can do beautiful work, but if they go, oh yeah, it's thread, oh yeah, it's a magnet, or yeah, it's this, you know, pocket or whatever, and they just kind of let it go. And I think it's so hard, especially, you know, with the scarf and rings, yeah, that, but this ball thing that I'm doing, it's, I know that that's going to happen. It's like, oh yeah, I saw this, or yeah, I know how that works. It's like you go, well, wait, I'm so emotionally attached to this. I didn't connect that with you. And it's not that it's me, it's my fault. I need to be able to find my inner connection to meet theirs. And that to me is a challenge that I feel that I achieved with Mottman, that I somehow don't know if I'll ever be able to do it anywhere else. And it's frustrating, but hey, there's other parts of life, you know, but that's really, you know, I just think that definitely in the in the Mop Man Act, nobody's ever asked me how I did that trick, or nobody said anything about the tricks. The best comment, however, I got was this woman. She says, I wish my mop would do that. And I went, that's what I want to hear. You know, I, it's that kind of thing, but it's rare that anybody has that, that can do that. And, you know, I could do it once, fine.
And I wonder if the, because you came into performing Mop Man from being a mime and learning and, you know, from people that you've mentioned, getting that support and learning tricks for that to make it a routine. Actually, I think it was the doll routine that you had to add magic to perform at the castle. Is that right?
Correct. That's right. Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah. So I suppose the more magic we know, and the more we're submerged in the magic world, the harder it is to have that constraint, because there was the thing I love about that act, and actually the thing I love about the scarf and ring, I love the magic in the scarf and ring, but it's the there's loads of magic in it, but it's slow and beautiful. But with Mop Man, like you said, there's constraint, more constraint, even more. It's not about the magic. It's those things are part of the narrative, which is wish fulfillment, or this, you know, this story that we're all, it's a little bit kind of fantasia. We're familiar with that story.
Yeah, we always feel that.
And I think I love them both, and I love the doll act. You know, I didn't know that was it's really up my street.
The doll act, yeah, I was like a mechanical doll thing. That persona, I worked the streets and made my living off perform that persona. No, I didn't know anything about magic. I was just the mime, and I got commercials, and I got pretty some nice work just because of that, the character, the me that I was expressing. It's sort of a vulnerable doll on the street. And people really connected with that. And I don't know quite what, but it had that same connection. As soon as I put magic into it, it took some of that away. And I noticed that as soon as it became a magic act, I lost, but I was ready to lose. I didn't want to be 35 years old and still being a baby doll. So, I needed to incorporate the magic, because it just had to have nothing. But it is true that it was really the magic in the doll, and the magic in the Mop Man are very simple, but they're relevant. But they still sometimes take away. Well, sometimes when you add magic, you can enhance it. And I'll get back to Derek Dergadio's show. He added magic, but it didn't look like magic tricks. He did a card thing, but otherwise the magic was magic. It wasn't a trick. It was something that added to the emotional content.
A trick, and instead of using the whole deck, we use just a few cards. I need someone to help me out. Someone, let's see, here's a gentleman. Would we give him a big round of applause, please? Come on up here,
sir. I'm really interested to see the crossover of, and again, you mentioned it in the work, but the crossover of your learning from yoga and how that came about. Well, let's start with how your love of yoga came about. When did that start, and how did it start?
It started as a lower back pain. I was taking dance classes. I've never been able to be a dancer, an actress. I can't remember lines. I can't remember steps. Very frustrating. So that's why a mime, I could just do what I want. And with magic too, I can't, you know, do a very simple sleight of hand thing. It's like, I can't do it normally. I have to find my own way. So I was taking modern dance classes, because that did relate to the scarf and rings. By taking modern dance classes, I really started working more on my movement, because, you know, Mop Man, you're just sitting there the whole time. So scarf and rings was a release of being able to move, which I love to move. So that fed that part. So I'd taken yoga classes, I heard it was good for you, but I was really flexible. So I thought, I'm really flexible. I don't really need yoga. Why am I doing that? It's boring. Then I found a few teachers that made me understand that it's so much more than, you know, being able to touch your toes. That's just that's the worst thing about it, that people get that mentality. But to build strength and to build, you know, confidence, because once you learn to sit right and you feel good. So I started feeling really good by practicing yoga because I had some good teachers. And then that inspired me to want to teach it, because I said, yeah, this is my next step. And knowing that performing it, I don't like to say that there's an age cap on it, but things do have to change. You can't, you know, I couldn't still be doing the doll act now. Mottman, thankfully, has kind of an ageless feeling to it. But I got to tell you, this is funny. And I do think it's funny about what Mike said. He says, you know, there used to be an act where you were an old lady and you became young again. And I said, and now you start as an old lady and you're still an old lady.
Good job, Mike. Well done.
I just fell out of my chair laughing. Again, I know. I know that people might think that was insulting, but I just thought that was the funniest thing ever. So I said, yeah, you're right. So it has a different feel to it. I think that when I was doing it, it was like I started in my mid-30s, but it does sort of have that feeling. You're getting youth again. You know, you're young at heart. No, it's not. She's getting youth. Now she's just having a better life. So it's a slightly different vibe to it. So I get that. So I spent all those years staying fit so that I would look good. Now from here on in, I'm spending all those years so I can feel good, which now is what matters a lot more, because I'm not going to try to look like I'm, you know, even 30. Okay, I'm 75, so I don't want to try to like look younger. I think that's really a crime to oneself. It's an, I don't want to be young. I went through that, so I don't, but I want to feel good. And you feel good by putting yourself into it and then understanding so much. It's about breathing. It's about strength. For me, it's strength. I've gained so much strength just by working from the right place instead of, you know, doing the extremities. So it was so helpful to me. And that's why I took the training. And I wasn't even sure if I was going to be a yoga teacher. I just wanted to get more knowledge. And very slowly, it kind of creeped into me that I really love, and I've never taught anything before. In my college years, I taught classical guitar to make a few bucks, but that was it. I'm not a teacher, but I just felt that this was something that I could care enough about that I can pass to others, especially people that I really care about, because I see people my age. I mean, I've gone in through this generation where I've seen people that look really good when they're young and they get older and they get sick and diabetes and overweightness, and it makes me sad. So I can't tell somebody else that they're obese and they should be better, but I hope I can inspire other people to understand that feeling better, you will look better in that sense. And it's just a very simple practice. Not, I won't say simple, it's deep. It's not, you know, and you don't need equipment necessarily. It's something that you can really do and not, you know, it's not like going to a gym or getting all these machines. You can really feel better by getting to know your body, and the practice of it, of that, makes you more aware of where your body is. And I just really appreciate that I can do that and share it as well. So that's why I'm here. And this is my future. I mean, I want to live to 100, but I don't want to be doing Mottman when I'm 100. I'm certainly done with, I don't want to travel as much, but this is something I can still do. I can still pass this information on. And so that's kind of my where I'm going. And I'll never be as good as I want to be, of course, but that's it. Beginner's mind. I'm always learning something.
So you say beginner's mind for people that don't understand that. And I kind of do. I mean, I've started many times Zen mind, beginner's mind. And I love the book and I love the concept, but can you just explain that?
I got that from Yo-Yo Ma. Did you read? He had a book. His book is called The Beginner's Mind, right? Is that the one you're talking about?
Oh, no, I'm talking about the Zen book. No, I haven't. I didn't, because I was going to, I mean, and as a lot of people know, usually on this podcast, we go for these questions of meeting someone, but we're not going to do a lot of that because I've got too much to find out.
So, because I thought about, you know, when you gave me those series of questions, I go, you know, I'm not a reader. And I'll admit that I'm not. So he's going to say, read books. And I go, what books? And I realize I do a lot of audiobooks. I combine that with my, yeah. So I do a lot of walking.
Yeah, me too.
And that's how I get my daytime outside. And yeah, it's called The Beginner's Mind. He didn't probably invent that word, but that's his thinking. And he wrote a book and he gave it out for free. It was an audio book. That's how I got hooked into Audible. So yeah, it's just having the joy of learning something new. I'm sure you've done other things too, where you first get started playing an instrument or something. It's so exciting. Oh my gosh. And then it gets hard. So then you don't want to, you know, it's no fun anymore. It gets too much work. And then you get bored with it. And with a beginner's mind, you don't get bored. If you're at a certain point where you grow, I think with any, because I've been through all these things, you have this exciting, the beginner's mind, that you're so excited because I'm learning something. And then you come to a plateau and you go, well, I learned that and I don't know, and I don't kind of, it goes into a plateau. And that's the killer right there, because that just takes you into. So you get that plateau and then you have to get more curiosity. That you'll never, there's no such thing as being an experienced yoga, an experience, or, you know, like a super anything, because there's always more to learn. And if there isn't more, then why even do it? So when someone apologized to me, well, I'm just a beginner, and I go, thank you, keep that. Because at a certain point, you start thinking you're an expert. And these people think, oh, I'm an expert, I don't need any help. You're just kind of destroying yourself. You don't even know it, but you're just doing it. I'd rather feel the pain than feel that I'm just so good at something that, you know, I'm the master. I would hate to feel that. And I think those people feel it too. They just don't know it.
Well, I think so. And people ask me when I'm doing for the first time in a long time, I'm quite enjoying doing close-up magic gigs because I didn't do them very much for a long time. So quite often people say, oh, do you ever work on new material? I'm like, all the time, you know, I'm always, and they're like, well, why would you do that if you've been doing it for 30 years? For me, I kind of say, well, there's nothing worse than seeing a magician who's dead
and
behind
there are,
the eyes.
That they think they know so much, especially maybe that. Yeah, the boyfriend that I had way back and right around high school, that was really into classical guitar at the time. And he was willing to go do something. And he goes, and I said, I can't, I got to practice. And he goes, why do you have to practice? You already know how to play. And I went, click. I just said,
you know, you
freak out. That's a sign that he doesn't get me, you know, and of course, you know, Mike doesn't get me on certain things either, but at least I know that, you know, we have very similar minds, but there are some ways that we are really different, but at least I know that. But that was so funny when that moment that my boyfriend said that, I said, yeah, I think I know what this is about. Because I, you know, if you tell somebody that's really into something, that, oh, why, you know, why do you want to practice that? You already know how to do it. It's like beginner's mind, that, you know, you want to feel like you're always learning something. We're made that. I think that's all in all our DNA.
Yeah.
We just don't always know it.
No, I think sometimes we've got to, I always, and I'm fascinated with this, and people that listen to me know that I'm constantly banging on about it, but I think that so many of us think that school is a place for learning, especially in the UK. You know, that's what you do. You go to school to learn and then you get out of learning and you can do. And I think that for many people that aren't luck, sometimes it's luck. You meet the right people, you discover the joy of, you know, self-learning and things like that. And, or maybe it's lucky in the way that I struggled at school because I was more introverted, even though I was mouthy, I was loud, but I was introverted that I couldn't learn in that way. But I think we can fool ourselves into thinking we're not very good at learning because we can't learn very well at school or in that scenario.
That's a myth. We're all, you know, that's not DNA, but we're all born a certain way, a trait. And I actually liked school. I had trouble with the social part of school most of the time, but I liked learning from school. That didn't never bothered, but there's a lot of really brilliant people that just couldn't sit, you know, they can't learn that. That doesn't grab them. Maybe they're ahead of it. We don't know. But that's for us to realize, where is it that we can all learn? We just have to find the way that we learn. As long as we don't go around thinking that we're better than anybody else, that we already know that. I don't, you know, somebody says, oh, I already know all about that. That tells me that they don't know anything. So I think that, we're all, I think, and that's something from birth. That's a trait from birth, I think, how we learn. And it's not for everybody. And there's just a lot of people, and I feel bad for them, the ones that don't have that, they just go, I don't know what I want to do. I'm not interested. I just want to make enough money to get a car and apartment and whatever. or be rich. What do I want to do? Oh, I want to be a millionaire. Those people depress me because they don't get it. They, you know, as soon as you start thinking money's going to make you happy, sorry, or fame is going to make you happy, that's not it. You have to cultivate that, and that comes from curiosity.
I know, and I agree with you on one of those things, but there's part of me, so the people that are chasing money, fame, wealth, you know, that's a sad thing, I think, because it, you know, we kind of know that that doesn't fulfill, you know, it's pleasure rather than happiness and all that kind of stuff. But I do sometimes envy the people who are content with without that exploration, because sometimes I find it exhausting, that constant exploration. It's like a switch off. I need to constantly play and explore, which is fun and enjoyable. But I think sometimes I wish I could just be content with, you know, being, which I've always tried with yoga and going balance back to yoga, that, you know.
Yeah, that's not, you don't want an extreme on that. You have to find moments where you can just feel good, just to case of feeling good. That's what's called a balance. I mean, you want to challenge yourself, but you have to know when it's time to go from one to the other. You have to know when to inhale, when to exhale. You can't live inhaling the whole time or exhaling the whole time. You put that with the breath thing, that's, you know, that it has to be balanced. Yeah. Not all the time.
Does yoga give that to you? Because it reminds us to, you know, I come and join you for yoga when I can on a Sunday in that group, which I've never talked to anybody about. I think I've told one person. So it's interesting talking to it about it now. But does it give us that time to remind ourselves to do that? To remind ourselves to, because for me it's a physical thing, but it's very important, that thing of grounding and just being.
No, it's really learning how to be a better self, being getting to know our bodies better. I always do that. I don't do any meditations and chanting or like that. I'll let other people do that. I do it just so that we can work within. You know, you call about working out because you want to get muscles and you want to lose weight, all that stuff. I'm about working in, go from the inside and get, you know, study your bodies to, you know, look at, you know, write books. There's a book called The Body by Bill Bryson. Do you know Bill Bryson? He wrote something called The Body.
Yeah.
He's writing it. Read it. You see
it?
Did you read
it? Not really. I've seen
look at it. Yeah. It's a really thick book. And he's not a doctor or anything like that. He got curious about it and looked into every little detail about what the body put together. And once you start understanding the complexity of this, instead of doing this, grabbing things, you know, we think that we treat our bodies as slaves, really. So if we just start respecting it, you know, people treat their pets better than they do. You know, they feed their pets food that they eat something that they would never let their pets eat. You know, you don't give a potato chip to a dog. I don't think that's a good idea. But just to take better care, not to worry about being flexible and because yoga has that reputation. No, it's for flexible women. That's what yoga's for. You're getting stronger in the right way. You're not building muscle. You're not, I have a six pack. I've never had a six pack.
I've never had one. I've had a six pack. It's there, but it's under things. it's under flesh. I think it's there. If I dig my fingers in.
So six pack, it below, underneath the six pack, below these rectus abdominis, whatever it is, there's more muscles that are more valuable for your strength, because there's a ton of muscles underneath there just to hold your body up. So they're called surface muscles in two ways. A surface muscle is one that's on the outside.
Yep.
It's also anything that's surface means that it doesn't have any depth to it. You know, like this is a surface person, just like. So basically, it's just for looks. It's not really, it can be pretty harmful. But just so you know, six packs can be harmful.
Oh, good.
Yoga, what I like about it is you can take it any way you want. There's so many directions, but certainly not Far Eastern. Mine is good posture, respecting your body, understanding that with time, I don't call it aging, time, you know, you have to work a little harder to feel good. You have to really, these muscles that we have, tons of muscles we have, we start using them less. And muscles are like people that if you don't, you know, if you don't pay it, or pets, if you don't pay attention, they're not going to pay attention to you. So it's a matter of really kind of getting in touch with as much of that as you can. Because as I said, If you ignore it, it's going to ignore you. And this is why people feel, oh, this is why they hunch over. This is why they get sick, is that they're not keeping all that. They take care of their cars or whatever, but they don't take care of themselves. So I see it all that. And it's fun to me. To me, it feels really good to do. And then I feel it's one of those things that I love to do, to practice. I love to teach it. And I feel good while I'm doing it. And I feel good afterwards. So what more could I ask for? You just start getting really a lot more positive about things. Never Pollyanna, just positive about mistakes. Yeah, that's human and I'll work again. Or yeah, I can't quite hold this pose any longer, but it's okay. You know, learned about a few extra things that I didn't have. So it's user-friendly as opposed to any sport, you know, sports or performing. You have to be there and you have to be good enough that people will pay attention to you. Yoga, you pay attention to yourself. And I think we need to do more of that, especially as time goes on.
Yeah, and there's something about, and I don't know if you're the same, and this is something I discovered quite late in life. When I was younger, the idea of running or yoga or anything that was, you know, was just to become fit and was almost, like when I was at school, if it was a punishment, you ran around the field if you were, you know, so it was, to me, it was always a negative. I mean, it was a revelation, because now if I don't exercise in some way in the morning, whether it's yoga, a walk, stretching, getting outside, the rest of the day is derailed. I don't get that. And I think you mention it as well, that you can procrastinate, you can take a long time to get around to doing things. And for me, if I don't get out and do something like that in the morning, as you said, with getting those things done, then it's so hard for me to have that positivity in my mind. And I think some people think of positivity as, yeah, just being happy all the time, but it's a positive approach to things. And our magic practice is something that really requires that.
Yeah. And it's a thing, you know, like, yeah, when you're a kid, it's, you hate it because people make you do it. And then when you get old, when you grow up, you go, oh, I'll look better if I do this, if I work out. And then later on, you less and less start doing things. So everything kind of starts to atrophy. And it'll just sit there and not help you. We need to keep on that. And because every day that you don't, I mean, I'm not saying it should be 7 days a week, but I give myself a practice of half an hour, 45 minutes a day. And every day a walk of, you know, like 45 minutes, or a bike ride. I do all my errands riding a bike. So that's, and I ran for like 40 years. I ran consistently pretty much. And then 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, I said, I don't want to run anymore. So anyway, I'm just saying that we have to keep the, you say right now, older, I got news for you. 20 years from now, it's going to be more than, I mean, I can tell you that experience. This is not something I learned in school, that it does talk to you. Your body, you just don't, people don't listen. I just see people my age, or, you know, I shouldn't complain about that. Really, if you take care of yourself, it's amazing, but it has to be a habit. Getting back to what are habits? There's too much audiobooks, but this is called Atomic Habits.
Yep.
It's a book, right? Yeah.
And
pretty a lot about this guy kind of talking how smart he is, but he does say who you are is about your habits. What is it that you do every day consistently, good or bad? Like, because there's good habits and bad habits. And I started thinking about that. Good habits are brushing your teeth. You do that every day. Bad habits are, let's say, let you drink coffee, which I don't think is that bad, but you allow that. And you just want to make sure that you do that consistently. If you call yourself a runner and you haven't run in 5 months, you're not a runner. Or if you call yourself a musician or a magician, if you say, yes, I'm a magician, but you haven't. No. So it kind of depends on how often you do things, and that shapes who you are. So some habits are easy, some are take efforts. And that's why I think that the things that we believe that we love to do, whether it's an art form or any kind of activity, if you do it every day, then that will grow. If you just do it and you go, I don't have time today, tomorrow, I'll start that. That's not good. That's not going to put you where you think you want to be. And never expect the result. Enjoy the journey.
Yes. And that's why I think it was important to me. Well, you know, I always do this thing of I've started doing this thing of what's an average morning, because I think it's so important. But I think the important thing for me was coming away from just magic in this podcast was because I have a lot of people contact me and they're frustrated with their practice, with their development in magic, with all manner of things. And I see that it's oftentimes because of those, you know, as he says in the book, atomic habits, but those marginal habits, those small habits that aren't in place that feed it all. And that's, for me, that's the, I'm seeing the link between the habit of looking after yourself. And you mentioned things stop working if we don't keep working on them. So it's not just our daily practice with magic, but it's the other things.
And they just go away.
For, you know, people listening to this, I know that some people are going to go, oh, I want to hear more about magic, but it's actually that it feeds it so much for me. My skills in magic got so much better when I started, you know, doing those other things in my life, like not drinking as much and the things that feed that. Uh-huh. I want to talk, it made me laugh earlier because you said that, you know, it's not like working out, it's like working in. And then I think about all of us at the end of the Sunday yoga session. We've definitely had a workout. I'm exhausted in a really good way.
Really? Did you? Well, you want to, what you did was that you activated these muscles that have been sleeping. That's why you're, you know, you started discovering all these parts that will actually work for you. I mean, I find I'm not strong. I mean, I'm small, I'm not strong. But now when I pick up something, I don't just pick it up. I start here, I pull from here, and then I pick it up. It makes it more meaningful, you know, and I think yoga can make magic more meaningful, anything like that, when you start thinking from inside. And yes, you want to work to a point that it woke it up. If you finish, I don't call it exercise. I call it self-help or self-care. That if at the end of any session you don't feel anything, that means you didn't get anywhere. And there's a thing in yoga that if you go into a pose and you're comfortable in the pose, you're not doing it right. You're not getting anything out of it. If you're doing a magic trick and you just don't feel it, then it's not worth it. I mean, if you make a living and you happen to do a trick that you don't like to do that you find is boring, that's one thing. But if you really want to truly be a magician, an artist with that, you have to do it with your soul. You have to do it from inside. It has to mean something to you. And because the audience catches it, whether you feel that or not, they really can feel that you're really in it. And you can always fake being in it, but it's really working from the depth, and you have, I mean, that makes sense when you think about it.
This that thing of if it's not uncomfortable, and I was joking, but it does feel good to work in a way that you feel like you've worked. You feel like you've been out of your comfort zone, but not into panic.
No, you've been in a learning experience. I got a really nice, Christopher Hart was like a saying, he said something about that. He said, thinks about me sometimes. And it was this one point where he had to back out of his driveway, and he turned around to look behind. He goes, hey, that feels really good. We really want to feel better. And it's really not about getting good at yoga, and it's getting good at life, really. If you feel good, then somehow that's contagious. Just like if somebody feels sick all the time and they tell you about all their ailments, it brings you down. If somebody feels good, we don't have to talk about how we feel good. We just kind of radiate that in a sort of very subtle way. And I think that's a really good thing to have.
Well, I'd put the money in the envelope that says it's got nothing in it. That seems a little bit too obvious, but maybe it's a double-double bluff. Double-double bluff. Double-double bluff. Double-double bluff. Double-double bluff. Well, I put the money in the envelope that says it's got nothing in it. That seems a little bit too obvious, but maybe it's a double, double bluff.
We'll talk about things that make you feel good and make you feel happy. We spoke briefly yesterday before the yoga session, and I said I've started learning the uke for the first time, and you know. Reached to the side and brought out this ukulele and said, oh, she's John Archer. So tell me about that.
Oh, it taught me about humanity, about, did you know John, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
Pretty well, or sort of?
Yeah,
or,
he's performed in my show a few times, and we've chatted. Like, I'm looking forward to talking to him here, because again, everything's going on when we meet, so.
Yeah, now when he's around, I say, you know, he goes, oh, stop that. So he's probably really bored with me talking about this, but I really want you to know it from me.
Great.
Is that Well, I love his comedy. And, you know, we've done shows together where, you know, he does this amazing, funny stuff. And at the end, he plays this sweet song on the uke. You know, it's just like, what a way to close a really crazy comedy. And it works. I mean, he just went straight to my heart. But about any uke, I just thought ukes were toys. And I didn't want to, you know, no interest at all. Classical guitar was my passion for 10 years. But a uke was like a toy. Who's going to bother? So, but then we were backstage. We were doing a show somewhere. And we're all backstage. And I just, his uke was sitting on the side. And I said, hey, can I just see that? Because I said, it sounds so good. I know it's because he played it well, but it had a good sound to it. And I picked it up and I went, that was one of the point when my life changed. I went, this sounds, you know, I couldn't play because I hadn't played guitar in 30 years, but I could sort of feel it. And I went, this is an instrument. This is not a toy. And I asked him, I said, tell me about this uke. He says it was made by a guitar maker, a classical guitar maker. I go, well, that's it. And I put it aside and I went, oh man, no, don't, you know, I just thought, no, don't just, you know, forget about it. That's, and then a year later or more on Facebook, he puts up a post. He says, I saw this Martin ukulele that I really want to buy. Should I buy it? So as a joking, not really completely jokingly, I wrote him an answer. I said, hey, how about I buy that little uke from you, and with that money, you can buy the Martin. Wouldn't that be great? And he kind of laughed. I go, so I kind of followed up a little bit and said, I was really serious about that. I said, would you ever be willing to sell that uke to me? And he goes, I don't think so. Okay. He says, but I'm coming out to LA and I can bring it out and show it to you again. I said, oh, that's great. So I looked it up. I knew that I figured out the name of it and the maker. And I go, that's about a $600 uke. It's worth it. It's beautiful. So I take six $100 bills. I put it in my purse. And we went to meet him at the castle. And he hands the uke to me. And I go, and I said, what? And he goes, here, it's yours. And I go, okay. And I start, because I said, can I buy it from you, please? And I start, and he goes, no, it's a gift.
Wow.
I just started to cry. I said, what do you mean? And he said, I know that you will do something with it.
Wow.
Which is part of the story that I'll tell you in a moment. And I said, really? He goes, yeah, let's do this. I'm giving it to you. You keep it. If you decide that you don't want to play it anymore, you give it to somebody else. And I said, well, you know, so I felt an obligation. I said, he's giving me this. I have to play it. I have to learn this thing. So I spent a month thinking about it. I had it and I was kind of goofing around with it. And I decided I need lessons. So I found a really good teacher and I got into it. But for the first year that I was playing, I said, I have to prove to John Archer that I'm worth it. It's like right now for me, I have to prove to Artem that I'm worth working. You know, it's like one of those things, someone that has faith in me, I had to live up to that. And so he was really happy that I did. And I played for him a couple of times a little bit. And I just thought that's one of the kindest things anybody's ever done for me, that just because of what he said, he says, I think you'll do something with it. And it's been, I'm not playing it as much anymore, but it's really helped me a lot. You know, I started singing a little bit, which I don't do. To me, it's an instrumental. And I love to play it now. I play it every day. And I just kind of, you know, and did a lot of arrangements of instrumental. And I just love, it's such a beautiful sound. So yeah, it's a real emotional thing for me. And that's part of that came from the magic world. I wouldn't have known that if he wasn't such a great magician as well. So isn't that? Yeah.
I just love it because, and something you said, I mean, it's a beautiful story and a wonderful thing. And there's a lot of karmic things going on there. And I don't mean on a spiritual, you know, past lives way, but, you know, you reap what you sow. But I think also something you said there struck a chord with me and I can parallel it to a lot of things. And, it, you know, without going on about myself, it's just a very odd thing. So I've had a uke for years. And I'm a guitarist and I learned very difficult pieces on the guitar, you know, because that's the ego. And it always used to be, when I first started, it was about showing off. I can play this, you know, as it often is with magic and cards. Look what I can do.
Yeah.
And I looked at you, and I like the sound of it and I like the idea of it. So I got one, but if I learned anything, it was on the guitar. And I picked it up 2 days, the day yesterday, and I thought, no, I want. It was interviewing another magician on here, Jack Rhodes, who said that he started off being a George Formby fan in the Uke. So I picked it up yesterday, and the minute I actually, for the first time ever, started learning something, I couldn't put this thing down. And it was easy because it's just, you know, it's, I'm not playing any complex. I'm not saying it's all easy, but I know guitar chords I can play. So the transition to just playing basic chords was easy. But there was something about it. And I'd got rid of that thing in my mind of, it's just a toy. It's so easy. It's like, you know, it's the mistake we make about bass guitars sometimes as well. Oh, well, they're easy. It's a, you know, but of course they're not. But it's easy, so we don't play that. And that's one thing. But I think it's so similar for me, and it has been in the past, but I think without sounding like an old man, getting to a point of not worrying about any of that ego stuff, of not only learning a magic trick because it's difficult. It's like, what works? What works in that
What speaks to you? What reaches you? Yeah.
That's just a lovely story. But there was something. Yes, you mentioned other people. You mentioned Artem and John. And it's not accountability. It's like accountability, but it's like a fluffy version of it to me. But it's the importance of other people. And I'm interested in this because your whole story has drawn on the kindness and the help of other people, whether it's your husband, Mike, have I got this right? Have you been married for over 40 years?
Yeah, 44. Almost 45.
Wow, yeah. Well, we've got to talk about that. But
it's living hell.
Yeah, yeah. He's a monster. He's allowed you to do this podcast. he's out, so you can do the podcast. There's a list of people that you write that if it would be, and I read that and it didn't make me sad, but you know, not wanting to be too self-indulgent, but the one thing I feel like I've missed is that part of it. And I have no regrets of the decisions I've made, you know, but I haven't been connected with a large group of people for a long time. So I found myself so often getting lost of going, I've got this great idea, and getting, going to that level of excitement, but losing it because there wasn't anybody to draw on. There wasn't anybody to say, oh yeah, that looks good. And I wanted to just talk about the importance of, or for you to talk about the importance of, and the role of other people, and whether it's Mike or friends, and how important they've been in your development as a person, and of course as a magician.
Well, here's where I'll bring my community. I've been like in guitar, mime, even a little bit of ukulele work, yoga. It seems like that my people are magicians, and I get everything out of them. That somehow that becomes my group, even if that's not my forte, the magic part, skill magic. And in that magic world, so that is the world that I know the most. And in any world, you have toxic people and you have gifts. And it's learning to know how, because people inspire me, people bore me, they anger me. That's the range of people.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of finding, you know, there's a thing of like, always make friends with people that are smarter than you. And I'm thinking, yeah, but that means they're making friends with somebody that's dumber, you know? So it's like, you can't really, but I feel I'm in this, I know it's like, you're smarter than me. So
it's their problem.
I know, I got to figure, I can't tell them I'm dumb, but yeah, because I'm a real loner, I really love to, I need to be 8 hours by myself. I really like that. I like practicing. I like just doing stuff on my own. And I need that. But I also need to remind myself that people are who inspire me and have gotten me, you know, if anywhere, they've gotten me where I've been. So it's a matter of your selection. And there's a lot of really good people around, especially if they see, like, the Magic Castle welcomed me so well because they saw that I was, since I was a mime, they found that, especially Mike, that they saw that I was combining another art form into it. And I think that is one of the things missing in the magic world, is that it's just like, it's not enough. Sometimes you have to put yourself into it, which, you know, hopefully we have a lot of other things in our life. Doesn't mean we have to put them together. Like, I did try to put magic and harp together and it didn't work at all. You know, I think you read that. So you have to do it. If you're a good person, that puts you in a good place. If you're generous with your ideas, if you're open, and not always talking about yourself, which some magicians do a lot. You know, if you're always busy, if you're always not like saying how many standing ovations you got and all that stuff, well, you know, that's really not going to. But if you know, there's vulnerability. I just did find like one more. I want to add one more thing. Me playing the harp. I was inspired by. That's a whole long story, but from my high school friend who's a harpist, and she lent me her harp for a few months while she went away, and I got completely hooked. So she was generous to lend me her harp and then give me a few lessons, and that really, so I had to please her. In a way, that's how it starts. Like, I want to please somebody, but then it ends up grabbing me, and the harp ended up grabbing me. And my dad, my mother had passed away, and I was telling my dad that I really wanted to get a harp. And he just, you know, he's, and I was not expecting this from him. I said, but it's like, it was $10,000 at the time. And he goes, I'll get it. I'll pay for it for you. And I went, really? Cause I mean, my mom died and he had money, and he says, yeah, I'll pay for the harp. And I'm like, where did that come from? And I said, why? And he goes, cause I think you'll do something with it. Exactly what John and exactly what Artem did, you know, and that those three people, just their faith in me and my desire to prove that they were right gave me that. And I don't do that anymore for John. I mean, he doesn't know how, he hasn't heard me play in years. So it's just that when you can get that gift from someone that you really admire and respect, that is gold, and you have to really hold on to it. And even if, you know, you think, well, I want to please that person, do it for that. Because if you want to please somebody and you end up not doing that, means you didn't want to do it anyway. You know, it just means, you know, I could have picked the harp and go, I couldn't pick it up, but I mean, you know, I could have just lost interest, but the interest increased. I didn't know where it was going to be. And, you know, with the harp, my dad gives me the money for the harp, and then I play the harp. What if I don't want to play it anymore? That didn't happen. I did finally, I don't play it that much anymore, but I stayed with it, and I didn't become a great harpist, but I was able to enhance my life with it, enhance my magic life, getting to work with, like working with Rob Zabrecki he's another great person that has really inspired me, and really close friend. And I've had a chance to play with him. I've had a chance to incorporate the harp into magic shows. So they will work their way into our lives, but we don't know when. And that's what's exciting. And even if it doesn't, learning any kind of skill, I think it's just, it's a brain, you know, it's good for your brain and your body. It makes you want to get up in the morning so you can go do it. And I think that's all worth working on.
So give me the you're married for 44 years. what's the, so give me, it's an impossible question.
No, ask it.
But I'm interested in the, without sort of, you know, intruding on your private life, what do you think the secret to a successful long relationship is, whether it's a friendship or a marriage, you know, when you're living?
Yeah, I think in our case, we're really different in a lot of ways. Basically our approach towards magic, when we both met, we were both performing. So that was our center point. We were both performing magic and the magic castle. So we were equals there in that sense. Well, his interest went more to magic history. I feel bad saying this, but that is not my interest. So he got really delved into history, and I really got delved into incorporating other things into magic. So we kind of went in that direction. But the core, very practical core one, our attitudes are, first of all, we don't have any religion, but I mean, there's no religion process. There's no like bad things in the way, like religion and finances and politics. We somehow were exactly the same in terms of where money should go and what. So in other words, we were both very we were thrifty, I guess you could say. And we're just both that way. If you marry somebody that wants to buy everything and live in the moment and, you know, buy fancy cars, and you're a person who'd rather just have a little small car, a little small apartment, then there's going to be some rifting there, because, you know, but we kind of like the same lifestyle. we have the same taste in furniture and things like that. The basic things like that really work. And sense of humor. We have very similar, we laugh at the same things. And I don't know if you've ever seen with a couple that somebody, the husband laughs like crazy and the wife's going, what are you laughing at? That kind of thing.
I've been in relationships like that.
You have that. Okay.
I've been in past relationships like that. I'll hasten to add, not present.
Okay. Yeah. I got to talk about you someday. We're going to do that.
Yeah. Well,
do you want to do that someday? Do it publicly, but you're getting all this about me, but I guess this is a podcast if you're talking to me, but
yeah, absolutely.
I would love to. We'll do that sometime. When you come out to the castle, we'll hang out. So, I think that those, the basics there, and just really good friends. And it didn't start out like it wasn't, I had all these bad relationships where it starts like, you know, fire and everything. And then it's a week later, it's like, or a month, it's like, really? This person? In both ways. But we were just buddies. We still are. I mean, we just like, you know, and I think that's the foundation. The practical foundation really matters, and self and respect. Of course, I should have said that first. I, even if I'm not a magic historian, I so respect the things that he does for magic, for the history and his knowledge and his generosity with people, and his ability to communicate. I mean, I just, and every time I see him perform, I laugh his heart. I mean, I've seen that act, and I just laugh because I the nuances. Yeah, but I've seen him more than you have.
I bet you have.
And the expectations, you know, and sometimes when he forgets something or he forgets a line or something goes wrong, it's just brilliant. So I just think it's all those things combined. And, you know, I never thought I would, I mean, I'm surprised that, I mean, because I'm interested, my interest changed so much over the time that, and usually my relationship were people that I was happened to be in the same thing, you know, whether we're a guitarist or whatever. So, yeah, I feel really fortunate on that. I think that it's really very grateful that that I did that.
Yeah. So for me, you can have similar interests, different interests, but it's a values thing. You know, you share the same values.
It really is. It's about values and taste. And I think sense of humor. I mean, it's your sense of humor says a lot about you. And I think, and we found that right away that was, you know, there's some, it's not, I'm not saying that it's always that way, but it has to be enough. And definitely our sense of how to treat other people and how to live. You know, if you gave me a fancy car right now, I'd be really uncomfortable. I'd turn it in for something like a, you know, I have a 12-year-old Honda car. I'm really happy with that.
Yeah.
I don't want to bring attention to myself in that way, you know.
So whether it's you and Mike or you, when it's not about magic, when it's not about yoga or those things that are in that first half of your day, what's your happy place? What's
I started running at that time, and he had run in high school and stopped. So for many years it was running. We used to go running together a lot, but that's not there. Now we walk more together. Actually doing a couple of things together now, which is probably really, well, we kind of talk to each other about performing, you know, little ideas and stuff. And he's helping me a lot with the ball, which is really, it's a very nice thing to do. And then also we're planning our future here, where we live in a big house now. We want to move into a big, this is a whole historic building that's opened up for us, apartments. And we've been in the process of buying and figuring out what to do with them. And it's really fun to kind of figure out what we want to do. Like, that's what we do in the house, is that we figure out what we want to do, what changes we want to make, what we want to add. And that's really fun for us too.
So as we kind of draw, I'm sure we'll talk again, but are there any regrets? You know, you're someone again that I find, without trying to sound too mushy, it's just very inspiring. You know, if I, in not so many years, are a similar age, I'd be very happy if I was in a similar situation. So, but have there been any regrets, you know, in the whole process?
I thought about that after I kind of mentioned that. I think that I wish I was a little bit more proactive. There's a saying that I take too seriously. That is this from a movie. It says, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
Meaning that if you're really good, you don't have to go looking for anything. So I always like test things, little things in front of people. And if they don't react, then I just go. This wasn't that way with the ukulele. Like, I really want to play the uke for people. But a lot of times, you know, you start playing and they all go talking to other stuff. And I go, well, I guess I'm not good enough, you know, and I just put it aside. And I get a little bit discouraged about things that I'm a little bit afraid of failure and doing. And my really fear is I'm so afraid of boring somebody that keeps me from talking. And I just wish sometimes that I would be more out there. I would gain more out of life if I would, like, you know, I was with my brother the other day and we're walking down the street and he stops, everybody stops and he says hi to them and he asks them a question. I go, I'd never do that. And then when I'm walking with Mike, he'll say, well, let's go see that person. And I go, no, I can't. I don't want to bother them. And it usually ends up being something really good. So I wish I was a little bit more gutsy and not so afraid of being rejected. I'm working on it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You're a self-proclaimed introvert like myself. And how how have you found that the social side of, you know, you're someone that works at the castle a lot and goes to the castle as a lifelong member. How have you found the social side of being a performer?
And
how have you avoided it?
No, between shows, I say, oh, I'm gonna go out and walk and say, I hide in my dressing room. I get so scared to go out. And then once in a while, I get really nice compliments, or once in a while, they just, you know, it's just, they say something I don't want to hear. I don't know, like, anyway, I'm really afraid of going out and talking to people. Maybe that's something I should change a little bit too, because sometimes I get to meet new people that way, and it's nice. But I, in a crowd, like you said, you're the same thing. As I was thinking the other day, when I'm in a big crowd, that's the most alone I ever feel.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt that? You feel like everybody else is talking and you're standing there doing nothing. And it's like, I think I just want to leave. And I have a little bit of trouble with that. But I try once in a while and, you know, get out there. There's a book for specifically about introverts. You know, it's called Quiet. Do you know that book?
Very well.
You got it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I did the audio book.
Susan Cain.
And I'm driving along and I feel like she's in the back seat talking to me.
Yeah.
It's like, so I got out of that. So it's really like the title says, it's how to thrive in a world where people can't stop talking. I just go, I am going to take this introversion, whatever it is, and use it to the max. And that is, spend that time practicing. It's good. You love it. Do it. But don't be afraid to show your work at some point. Do show your work. And if you fail, you do. Don't be afraid of failure. So I work on that because I think that we can really, nobody can save the world, but I mean, we can really enhance the world by being who we are. And, you know, you can't say, oh, I wish I was an extrovert. I don't want to be that. I want to be who I am. I just want to be a little bit more. See, like right now talking to you, I would never talk to anybody unless I felt it was that I'm supposed to talk to you. But this kind of conversation, I'm not at all used to. Because I don't want to bore people, but you made me do it, so I thought it's okay.
I made you do it.
Yeah, you did. You forced me. Thank you.
Yeah, the check's in the post of $0.
Thank you. That's exactly, that's my prize from you. For you, yeah, you're being even more than generous.
No, listen.
Time's your generosity.
It's just, I it's endlessly fascinating, and I think it's so important that we talk about these things and have the courage to, as you said, be ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So this is special for me too. And I hope we can have a one-on-one too, because I'm going to ask you other questions, but let's be buddies for forever. I'm really grateful that I know you and keep coming to yoga and play with us. So
how do you want to be remembered?
Okay, I can't change the world, but what I want to ever do is leave a lot of fairy dust. This means, have you ever been somewhere and something really, a joyful feeling comes through you and you can't quite sure what it is, and you start going through it, oh yeah, I got that from, she said that, and now I feel that. So it's fairy dust. So it doesn't happen right away. You don't have to go, I have to be thankful to this person. And I'm getting that with yoga a bit. People said, oh, yeah, I just remember I was picking something up and it felt so good to pick it up. And I thought about you. So, or I heard this music or this or that, or something you said once really made me feel that. That's fairy dust, because it doesn't get in the way. It's just something, you know, feel that. You know. So I want to leave fairy dust.
Well, for the last 90 minutes, Tina, you have, which is the exact reason why I wanted to talk to you. It is. And it's, you know, I will not apologize for, you know, having a chance to say these things, because they're important. They're important for people like me and you that are more introverted, that may seem extroverted, that don't get the chance to share or hear. I mean, I'm sharing all the time all over social media, so I can't really say that, but to hear other people's stories and it is important, and I thank you so very much for that.
Same goes with you. And we're gonna go to Blackpool. Are you gonna be there?
I am. I'm gonna be, I think. Yay. I'm doing a lecture at Blackpool, I think.
Yay.
Oh, I don't know what I'm gonna yes, I won't say that publicly. I mean, I know exactly what I'm gonna say.
You do? Seriously?
Yeah, no, I do have a lecture, but I wanna change it a little bit.
Do it, and you can send me drafts and stuff. Okay, we can do that with each other. I'll send you my progress. Are you? Oh yeah. You froze for a minute. So no, I mean, I think let's be that kind of buddies. Just run stuff by me and be nice to yourself. Say that you really want to do it. Why do you want to do it? Because you want to share all these things that have been on your mind, and you're worth sharing. Ideas that are worth sharing. Isn't that what the TED talk is about? So please feel free to show your work. I'm talking to myself as I talk. Don't be afraid. Failure is only if you don't even try. That's failure. You gotta just do it.
Yeah.
You're here for a reason, and that's your reason, is to enhance other people's lives.
Thank you very much. And I'm gonna pretend to say goodbye to you now, and then you're gonna stay there. And
okay.
Thank you very much. Lovely.
Thank you,
Tina Leonard.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. So thank you very much, Tina, again for that. And thank you so much for listening. And do check out the links below. Go right back and please look at all of Tina's work and the great stuff she does, including, as I mentioned, her first act, The Doll Act, which is on YouTube on the Paul Daniels Magic Show. It's great. I love it. And please check out onlinemagic.co. That'd be very lovely of you. Onlinemagic.co, as I've mentioned, my membership site, loads of videos, but many, many years of work into that, and I think you will like the results. Onlinemagic.co. Do read the Trustpilot reviews and check out the YouTube channel Real Magic Review at Steve Faulkner at Real Magic Review on Instagram and other things, probably. Thank you very much. Have a great one, and go leave that 5-star review. Cheers.